Take a look at quote number two. And this quote is worth gold. This is the Chasam Sofer, an authority in the 17 to 1800s. And the Chasam Sofer explains that the correct way to read quote number one is that so you shall do for generations is not going just on you should make a sanctuary, but also on the pattern by which you make the sanctuary, which is like all that I have shown you. And that's how it's going to be in every generation. Take a look at quote two. When David drew up the plans for the first Beis HaMikdash, he did so all from the understanding which Hashem granted. In other words, he had a vision, he had prophecy. Likewise, the third Beis HaMikdash will be based on the prophecy of Yechezkel. The mitzvah, according to the Chasam Sofer, is to build the Mikdash of each generation according to all that I will show you, even though each one is somewhat different than the others. We have a principle that if there's a mitzvah in the Torah, a later prophet cannot change that mitzvah. If you have tefillin, four boxes, a later prophet can't say, well, now that we're approaching the messianic age, I think we should have a fifth box, and it should have the prophecy of the Messiah in it. You basically throw the guy out. There's no such thing. You can't alter Torah. And therefore, the Chasam Sofer had a problem with this mitzvah, because the mitzvah, as it was performed in the desert, with the sanctuary, in the sections that were specifically outlined how to build it, is not the same as the one we're going to build in the future, or the one even that David put the floor plans together, the architecture for Shlomo to build. It's not the same. How did he do such a thing? How could he change? So what the Chasam Sofer does is very subtle, but it's brilliant in its impact on the mitzvah. He says the mitzvah is to build a sanctuary according to all that I will show you in that generation. That means that Hashem basically says, wait for the prophet to tell you how the mitzvah of building the Mishkan will apply in your generation. And that suddenly leaves the mitzvah open to the prophecy. And the prophet, when he says, go an extra two amos this way, is not contradicting Torah. That's exactly what the Torah said would happen. Like all that I have shown you, so you'll do in every generation. I will show you. It's a major breakthrough. If you don't get it right away, it sounds subtle. You work on it, but the Chasam Sofer's problem is you just can't have a mitzvah that changes according to prophecy of a later generation. Other mitzvahs. By other mitzvahs, the only concept you could have is called a hora'a sha'a. A prophet can say that Hashem ordered me to do something unusual for a specific application. You have an example in the beginning of Hosea. He was told to take a prostitute as a wife in order to represent the Jewish people that they have rejected and strayed with immoral relationships. In other words, the Jewish people are supposed to be married to Hashem exclusively, and they went ahead and strayed. They dealt with idols, they dealt with other forms of worship, they dealt with different things. To rebuke them, Hosea is told, go and actualize that in a matrimonial relationship to illustrate to the Jewish people what they did when they rejected me. And it was horrifying. Can you imagine? The prophet goes onto the bad street in town looking for somebody. So some commentaries say, oh no, it was only an image, it was only a prophecy, it wasn't intended to be implemented. But some of the commentaries say, yeah, that's called a hora'as sha'a. It's a specific prophecy, to do something once for a specific reason.
Okay, but this requires a Navi?
Yes, you can't have Hodra Shah without a Navi.
Well, how about, there have been times in history, in fact, relatively modern times, when a rabbi, because of very difficult conditions, suspended a certain mitzvah or...
Give an example.
For example, during the Shoah, I don't know this specifically, but in the Warsaw ghetto, if there is not sufficient water to drink, then the rabbi could say, well, you don't have to wash because you can't use wastewater.
It's a perfect example. Okay. Right. What gave them the license to say, you don't have to wash for bread if there's not enough water for drinking? What gave them license to do that?
The preservation of life. I mean,
it's a mitzvah in the Torah.
Okay, actually, yeah, okay.
That's what we always want to do. We believe that the structure of Torah is perfect in its structure, and any out that you will ever need, if it's a legitimate out, will somehow be structured somewhere in Torah. So if you have a question of danger to life, and you have the question, am I allowed to absolve people of this mitzvah? Then, yeah, v'chai b'hem, you shall live through Torah, is the topic that we invoke, and as a result, you can issue such a ruling.
I remember a long time ago reading about there was a plague of some kind, and there was a ruling that, as you say, absolving people from fasting on Yom Kippur because there's something about. That if they didn't eat, it would be life-threatening.
Very good. One of the heroes of the Jewish people from the 1800s is a man by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is a very talented person, charismatic, unbelievable memory, very talented person. The first time he emerged, in other words, he was a private scholar, no one really knew him. The first time he emerged was when there was a cholera epidemic, and he ruled that everybody has to eat on Yom Kippur. Because he felt, everybody agreed that if a person's already sick, then they have to eat. But his chiddush, his novel insight was that if a person doesn't eat on Yom Kippur, he'll be more susceptible to catch it. And he ruled that everyone, even the healthy people, have to eat on this Yom Kippur. He got up in shul, and he made kiddush publicly on Yom Kippur, and ate some cake, and then sent it around. And then he went to the next shul and did the same thing. And it made such a ruckus in the Jewish world. Again, if the person's already sick, everyone agrees. But to rule that everyone should eat so that they shouldn't have a weakened constitution, that was a novel insight. And basically he was forced to reveal his prowess in Talmud and practical medicine and everything in order to prove that he was worthy of making such a ruling. Because they really got on his case.
When was it a sound decision? I mean, in the light of...
Yeah, everyone agreed once he was done.
In the light of better understanding of medicine and infectious disease.
It makes sense. I mean, it's a reasonable... Yeah. Just assessing the situation, it's the kind of thing very often we can have a gut feeling that you're supposed to do something unusual, like eat on Yom Kippur under these circumstances. But it takes the ruling of a great person. And the basic question was this Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, unknown in the Jewish world, was he worthy of that decision? And, yeah, because based in Torah, v'chai b'hem, you should live through the mitzvahs, had to be the loophole, the thing on which you can hang your ruling and connect it with Torah. So you have the same thing over here. You shall make a mikdash according to all that I have shown you, and so it shall be for generations. In each generation, you will build a mishkan according to these types of terms.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. Is it already laid out in this prophecy of Yeheth's Kol?
Yes.
Oh, so all the details are in there.
Yeah, but you know how prophets are. If you don't have somebody guiding you as to how to read each sentence and which part of the structure he was referring to in each section of the verse, it's a bit cryptic. So even though we have from at the end of the book of Yechezkel, from chapter 40 and on, for about five chapters, we have description of how the temple is supposed to look, it's still not a do-it-yourself kit.
It's not real clear.
It's not so easy.
Okay,
so. And the way they phrase it is that Eliyahu HaNavi will still have to guide us. In other words, it's recorded, and he'll be able to show from the verse, okay, now we're going to draw the dimensions for the right side. And here it is in the verse. But if we would try to do it yourself, so it's like all of Torah, you could struggle with it, and until Hashem wants to reveal it, or until you have a mentor who has a tradition on it, you're struggling. You can't claim that you got it right. So that's one of the problems as to why we don't just go ahead and build the Beis HaMikdash right now. There are other problems.
And who's going to accept the prophet? A body of rabbis? Or?
Very good question. So there's the joking answer. The joking answer is, if all the Jews can agree on this prophet, then you know it's messianic times. And that's very helpful. Because generally we are, I don't know if the word is contentious, but we're opinionated. He doesn't wear the exact style suit that I anticipated the mentor of the Jewish people to wear. You know? So, but if everyone goes ahead and can actually see into the essence of the person, no matter what he wears, long, short, dark, light, and see the essence of the person and recognize him as a leader, so then we know. We look at each other, you look at me, and I look at you, and we say, this guy is for real. So then we know we're on good turf. That's the joking answer, which is true. The real answer is that, yes, the Rambam describes that there's an order, a progression, of how mitzvahs are done when you're entering special times. There are three mitzvahs. King, that the Jewish people should have a king, that we should destroy the seed of Amalek, we should destroy, in today's terms, people would say, you know, terrorism, used to be Nazism, destroy people who are truly evil. That concept, that you shouldn't have evil still cropping up as a movement, and building the Beis HaMikdash. So you have three mitzvahs. Again, king, destroying Amalek, and the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam writes that a king has to be appointed by the high court, by 71 sages. So there has to be a Beis Din, a court, to begin with, of recognized leaders. They go ahead and they appoint a king. Once there's a king, we have a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. And if you don't have Amalek, it applies to enemies, people who wish to destroy goodness in the world. And once you've destroyed those enemies, then it's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam writes that if a king should arise and be appointed upon the Jewish people, and he does destroy the enemies, and he does build the Beis HaMikdash, then you could rest assured that he's what we are waiting for. He's the person we keep calling Mashiach, the anointed one who will be the king in the end of days, because he is being the king in those days, because he's destroyed the enemies. We rest in security, and he built the Beis HaMikdash. And that's the concept of Mashiach, which is closely linked to Beis HaMikdash, the concept that you can finally reach the point of actually living in those utopian days that we're waiting for. The Rambam does write later on that the exact order of everything is not pivotal, because Hashem purposely left it somewhat ambiguous in the different prophecies, so that he even words it. We have a tradition that Eliyahu comes first. Our tradition is Eliyahu comes first, and that's the way it is. The Rambam writes, you know, but we're not really sure. It could be Eliyahu comes second. Yeah, that's not the governing aspect of faith. The governing aspect of faith is that it will happen. Now, your point is basically the scenario by Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba did not destroy the enemies of the Jewish people. He was first appointed and recognized and respected as a king. For those not familiar with the history, Bar Kokhba arose as a king after the destruction of the Second Temple. Rabbi Akiva, who was the sage of the generation, recognized him as a potential Mashiach. It was possible, and he respected him as such, until they checked him and they realized that he didn't have the divine inspiration that Mashiach is supposed to have. But until that time, they were respecting him as a possible king, which fits right into what you're saying, that it could be the sages will appoint him as king. They'll refer to him as Mashiach, but he has not yet destroyed the enemies. He has not yet built the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we're not yet sure that he really is. We're respecting him almost as a hope. And when Bar Kokhba was, when it became clear that he didn't have the divine inspiration, and especially when he was killed, it became clear that he wasn't Mashiach.